It's time to reclaim control, not just of your law firm, but of your life. Welcome to the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. Discover how early adopters are leveraging cutting-edge legal tech and early adoption strategies to lead the industry while embracing work-life balance. Unlock the secrets to a thriving law practice and a balanced, happy life with the Law Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 405 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm here with my good friend, Sam Malai. My name is Neil Tyra, and we are your hosts today for a really, I think, informative podcast. Sam, we're going to talk about something that I know a lot about, and that's making mistakes. We're going to talk about the five biggest mistakes that law firm owners make and should avoid in order to have their best year yet.
So we all make mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes, right, Neil? As long as we just don't make the second mistake for the second and third time.
As long as you learn from it and you move forward, then yes. I think, frankly, you know, making mistakes is a learning methodology. You know, you have to embrace that. I mean, it doesn't mean that you go out and purposely make them, but if you don't make a mistake, you're not trying.
Exactly. All right. So let's start with we're continuing from last episode. Ready? If you haven't listened to our last episode, please do, because they were pretty insightful. So let's continue. Number six of the biggest mistakes that law firm owners make is being clever, not clear. Being clever and not clear. Found that a lot of lawyers, they get too fancy when it comes to their marketing, their messaging, trying to kind of be very on the creative side. But what I've learned from experience is it's a lot better to be a lot more clear and straightforward and as succinctly as possible with as few words as possible. The more you can refine it and get more straight to the point, the higher the conversion rates. So while creativity is valuable, actually clarity takes precedent over that. You know, let's try to give some examples. You know, when it comes to your advertising, a lot of people try to get kind of creative when it comes to their hooks, try to use ambiguous kind of similes or analogies or some kind of like unclear language where maybe sophisticated people can understand it or some certain type of people can understand it. But for the average person, it takes a little bit of brain power to really understand what they're saying. Instead, if you call out clearly those people that you help and very succinctly explain the specific problems that they have in layman language, specific pain points, not like the legalese pain points, but like specific actual pain points, the feelings, those exact kind of, when you take a moment of how they're feeling at that moment when they're dealing with that pain, and you put that succinctly into words, that's what resonates and actually converts in marketing. And when I was learning this, there was a really good resource that I learned from, which I'll share with our audience. And that's from Donald Miller. There's an amazing YouTube video called Donald Miller's Story Brand One-Liner Exercise. It only has 300,000 views right now, which it actually deserves to have millions of views. And it was really game-changing for me to get really clear on creating a one-liner every time I wanted to launch a new law firm, a new advertising campaign. That was kind of like the foundational piece I would go to get down my one-liner, which we'll get to shortly. And from that kind of, I was able to create all the, again, campaigns, advertisements, the websites, the funnels, the emails, the text, and everything came from that. So that's, should we go through the one-liner, Neil?
Yeah, my observation is that I think a lot of times we as attorneys think that we need to be the creative guru for our marketing. And, you know, you went to law school to be a lawyer and you're an entrepreneur to excel in business. So you have to recognize what you do well and what you should leave to the professionals. And, you know, this Donald Miller's framework here will help guide you. And you, if you're going to use a professional to work on that, then this will give you some additional focus. And so, yes, let's go through it.
All right. So this exercise is pretty much the answer you will give when somebody asks you, what do you do? So when somebody asks, what do you do? Imagine you're at a party and, you know, people are talking and you ask somebody in your little clique, hey, what do you do? So person number one says, I'm an at-home chef. Okay, great. That sounds good. Person number two, what do you do? And person number two says, you know how most families don't eat together anymore? And when they do, they don't eat healthy. I'm an at-home chef and I come to your home to make sure you enjoy your food and maintain your healthy lifestyle. When people hire me, I free up their time, their frustrations, and make them more money. Which one engages you more? Which one kind of captures the essence of how you help people? Well, definitely the second one.
Sure.
Well, there's a framework to this. So let's go through the framework. And it's three parts. The first part of the framework is the problem. You want to clearly identify your client's problem. Again, we mentioned this, these specific feelings and words, these feelings that people are experiencing before they come and hire you. Second part is, what's your solution? And then very succinctly, again, avoiding any legalese, just try to take any legalese out. As soon as you notice that it's something that you probably know as a lawyer, or something that you do, try to avoid that. Instead, what's the ultimate result or ultimate benefit that your potential clients get months after you help them? And the third is, what's the reward? How does your client's life look like after their problem is resolved? And that should lead to a 1 to 2 sentences max, very succinct kind of description of your pretty much what you do. You know, we gave a little gist of this, but I remember when I got exposed to this, Neil, I realized the foundation of the messaging of the law firm is it starts from here. So we actually dedicated our program, the first module, a good portion of this was working in the trenches to get this down, working in a kind of like a workshop setting. You know, here's some of the more examples. Here's some examples for estate planning lawyers, for business lawyers, et cetera. Now go create your own. People will go create it and they will come back, share it, and we will refine it together until we kind of lock it in. And it's one of those things also that's not like, you know, you just get it from this first, you know, try you do this. It usually takes weeks, sometimes months, and sometimes even years. I have an Apple note on my phone that's called straight up one-liners. And, you know, as the new things came to me and I get more clarity and how can I, and I ask myself, how can I refine it? Even years later, I'm kind of refining that one-liner.
I think that's a really important point, Sam, because again, you want to leap off the gangplank, so to speak. You want to move on with this, but don't think that you have to lock this one-liner or this, you know, 2 or 3 sentence description of what it is you do and how it helps your clients. Don't think you have to lock that in right away. You're going to refine it and continue to refine it over and over again until you get the results that you're looking for.
Totally. All right, let's go to the next one. It's an important one that I'm sure a lot of podcasts have been is on this topic, but it still doesn't take away from the importance, which is the mistake of not knowing your numbers. My mindset is you can only scale with numbers. So one of the prerequisites before scaling is you need to know what is going on, specifically when it comes to you with your numbers. And a lot of people fall into the trap of overcomplicating things when they, you know, when it comes to knowing your numbers. In the very beginning, the most fundamental two numbers, the only two numbers you need to know to scale is just two things. Number one is cost per acquisition, essentially how much did it cost you to acquire a client, which is straight up just, it's your marketing divided by a number of clients you sign up. So you spend $10,000 to get 10 clients, your cost per acquisition is 1,000. That's the first number. And second is your lifetime customer value, aka how much is this client worth to you? You know, if your average net attorney's fees is $5,000, then that is your lifetime customer value. As that is the foundational numbers that you need to know before you even start spending money in marketing and scaling and automating all that stuff. Everything comes on the back end of knowing those two numbers. But and then once the good part is once you do know those two numbers, then marketing and scaling becomes really, really easy. Honestly, a lot of it comes down to just being able to be more aggressive and more liberal to spend more. Essentially, as long as your ROI is at least 200%, that means for a dollar in, you're getting $3 out or $2 profit. As long as you have that, then you're encouraged to go spend as much money as you can to make more, turning more of those $1 into $3 or $5 or even $8. Which this is what we do. So, know your numbers, at the foundation at that level. And I could even talk beyond that, you know, how it could become more granular than that.
Yeah, you know, this was a big challenge for me as I grew my law firm, because you know, the data was kind of all over the place, and I really needed to sit down and take some time to really kind of focus and get it in a way that I could make sense of it. I mean, for instance, you know, there's a lot of numbers, there's a lot of reporting available out of my accounting package. I use QuickBooks. I know a lot of other people do QuickBooks Online, but I never knew how to get the most out of that. Now, I turned to hiring a fractional CFO, and his entire job is to feed me these numbers so that I can evaluate the health of my business. And I think that's one of the best investments that I made in the firm, was hiring somebody that could help me get that 40,000 foot view. And I'll give you just kind of a real quick example. One of the things that he suggested that I do was to start to track how long it takes for a client when they sign up with our law firm until we are completed with their estate plan. I do estate planning work. So what's the average time for creating an estate plan? And that proved to be some really valuable information. When we first started, our average was 57 days, wow, start to finish, which is, you know, it's kind of a long time. But when we kind of dug into that and try to understand where was the number coming from, we found a lot of the delay was in the client response, not our response, but in how quickly the client could turn around the data. So that helped us guide what we needed to do to improve things. And I can tell you, we've now cut that in half over the course of a year. So knowing your numbers provides valuable insight into the operation of your firm and helps you target where you need to be applying focus and interest to make it more efficient and ultimately more valuable.
Totally. And what I try to do is, at the very least, I need two sets of numbers. The first set is our marketing numbers. Ideally, for each marketing source, I want these numbers. Number one, and I usually try to do this on a daily, weekly, and monthly, at the very least monthly, and then go from there. Number one is the cost. How much did it cost me to run ads from that specific source? Number two, number of leads, qualified leads, or meetings. You know, every law firm is different. Some people just straight up, you know, every lead that they get is qualified, or should, you know, is more or less should be qualified as long as you sign them up. So it should be leads. If you get a lot of unqualified leads, then I want to track the qualified leads. If your core marketing leads to meetings, great. I want to know how many meetings. The third number is your cost per lead, your cost per qualified lead, or cost per meeting. Again, depending on what works for you.
It is, yeah.
Number four is how many clients did you sign up? Number five is cost per acquisition, which is again, the cost divided by number of clients you signed up. And number six is the ROI. The ROI is just simply the revenue that you made minus your cost divided by the cost times 100. That will give you a percentage. If you see, when you do that calculation that I just explained, if you see that number is over 200, that means you're doing something amazing. Go spend more money. If you're doing something below 200, then you need to optimize more. If you're breaking even, then at that point, my mindset is, when did you start this campaign? If it's now you're like 3 months in, 6 months in, and you're still not profitable, or you're losing money or breaking even, then that's cause for concern. But if you're in the first or second month, I would say, okay, maybe keep at it and just optimize. So that's the kind of things that I look for on marketing. And on the back end, as you said, for operations, all I try to do is just to get an updated P&L statement, profit and loss statement. And I use QuickBooks for this, QuickBooks Online. All my law firms, I know with clarity how much money is coming in, how much money is coming out. I look at the net, I look at the gross, see if things are growing. And as long as I kind of have this kind of macro view from the P&L statement, then just scale from there. But at the very least,
Maybe something we can talk about on a future episode, Sam, is the pushback that I get from a lot of attorneys when I talk about tracking your marketing costs is, wow, that's a lot of time and effort to get those numbers. How do you go about doing that? So that might be something we want to talk about. What's an optimal way of capturing that data?
At the very least, you start off with manually in a Google Sheet is a good place to start just to get a grasp. And the mindset is every time something happens, every time a lead comes in, or every time a client is signed up, go set up a Zapier integration for that to automatically update a Google Sheet. Foundational, just a way, a place to kind of keep track the number of leads, number of clients. Once you get that, you kind of get a grasp of what's going on. Then over time, you could create dashboards. We use HubSpot dashboard live. That means at any point, I could go look at this month, last month, 3 months ago, from each source, how much is our cost? How much is our leads? What's our cost per lead? What's our cost per qualified lead? What's our cost acquisition? All that stuff very granularly live in a HubSpot dashboard. But I would say for most people, just start off manually, Google Sheet. If you can set up a Zapier integration to be able to, you know, bring that automatically into your data, great. And then build from there. And these are all things that also is beyond most people, as you said. However, you don't necessarily need to be the one to set this up. You hire people that set this up. And one of the good perks of our program is we have people that are trained and do this and have exposed to this and are setting this up on a daily basis. Again, all these things that we share about, we try to share the knowledge and the information. But if you need help implementing, this is exactly what my Legal Academy does, is all this backend kind of growth help.
All right, let's move on to number eight.
Number eight is focusing on, well, the mistake is focusing on the what more than the who. Focusing on the what more than the who. So the mistake is the what is usually about what you do. That's a mistake. And it's kind of like it's the basic way that every lawyer talks. I'm an estate planning lawyer who does this and look at my achievements and look at blah, 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 blah. Instead, you want to flip the language about who do you help and how do you, and what's the pain points that your clients have and what's the light at the end of the tunnel without talking about what you do, the middle part. Okay. So you're completely flipping what your mind wants to do. And I'm exposed to, you know, hundreds of Facebook ads every day that I analyze, and 80-90% of it is in that framework. And I'm like, rookie mistake. I'm so sorry. You're probably going to be running these ads for the next couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, and you're just not going to go anywhere. And then you're going to stop it. And then you're going to blame, oh, Facebook ads didn't work for me. No, that these things work. You just have to be done correctly. But if you focus more on the who, more than the what, then you'll see your conversion rates will shoot up.
Can I also suggest that I think it's a great focus point here, but not just for your marketing and your advertising. I think this is also true about your staffing, because a lot of times when we go to scale up our staff, we're thinking about what are they going to be doing. And I think when you think about it, who's going to be doing what is the more important question. Okay. And so when you look for staffing opportunities, I've always felt that you find the person first and then you'll match them to what needs to be done. That's always been my focus.
Totally. Neil, let's go to number nine. Number nine is not embracing technology and having limiting beliefs about tech and automation. And Neil is already shaking his head. Neil.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, you know, being an old techie myself, I see this all the time. And you know, it's never been a better time to embrace technology and leverage technology to improve the efficiency of your law firm and ultimately in the long run, the profitability of it. I'm always astounded by folks who say, I'm too old. Or I'm not, that's not something I can devote my time to learning about. You got to find some way to stay abreast with what's going on, because, you know, Sam's a perfect example of somebody who's right on top of things. And if there's thousands and thousands of people, not quite as good as Sam, but who are also doing a hard look at technology. And if you don't at least try and keep pace with them, you're just going to fall dreadfully behind. And look, you know, I'm guilty of that myself to some degree. When it came to AI, I was a little slow, as I've said in previous episodes, a little slow to embrace where AI was going. And now, as we'll see a little later on, as we talk about this, how it's just going to be in everything we do. And the real challenge is to know what to focus on, what technology to focus on. Don't go chasing every shiny, object. You have to be a little selective. And then once you decide what it is, or as we've said in previous episodes, you really have to take a deep dive and get to know everything that that technology, that application can do for you and leverage it.
And it's those self-sabotaging words that you mentioned. I'm too old for this. Yeah. I'm not technical enough. You know, these young wizards and all this kind of putting yourself down, even though they're very innocent sounding, but they're actually super, super harmful. I cannot express how significant they are to your psyche and to your result, ultimately to your result, what those little innocent sounding words do to you. So from now on, I want everybody to change that kind of perspective. No, I am technical enough. Even if you got to fake it till you make it, you got to kind of say that to yourself. I am technical enough. I love this. This is going to be life-changing for me. And, I'll figure it out, or I'll find somebody who can figure this out for me. Not being scared by it, but embracing it will really make a difference.
Now, having said that, there are some technologies, some platforms that I feel aren't user-friendly enough. For whatever reason, they kind of lost sight of who the person is on the other side of the screen. So you may find it may be that you're looking at the wrong tool, right? You're looking at the wrong platform, one that hasn't matured enough or given enough thought to the user experience. So that's why, a guy like Sam in My Legal Academy can help guide you to those types of platforms and products that have already been vetted. Okay, so you don't have to spend time, waste time.
Yeah, because 90% of tools are kind of waste of time, and you don't really need them. And there are a lot of shiny objects out there. So yeah, that's the benefits of having a community where you can actually search for that to see if there's already been people have talked about it. If not, post about it, see what people say. We've already tested and tried out most of these tools, so be able to kind of save you a lot of those time, so you don't have to go down the rabbit hole. Number 10 is something that I feel very strong about is over networking. Of course, everybody's different. So some people are built to be extroverts. They love meeting people, be able to learn, be able to connect to people. But there is such a thing as over networking. So yeah, there are, I think, Neil, if you have some things to share about this, my thoughts are there are some benefits to networking, but I think overdoing it too much is actually a hindrance.
Yeah. And when I first started down this path, 8 years ago with the law entrepreneur, when we talked about marketing law firms, all anybody ever talked about was networking, relationship building and networking. And while that's absolutely important, I would say don't do it if you're not enjoying it. I talk to hundreds of attorneys who say, I gotta go network. I gotta go to this Chamber of Commerce event. I'm gonna go to Kiwanis or whatever business association meeting, and I just hate it. If you don't like it, you're not going to be good at it. You're not going to get anything out of it. It's going to be a complete and utter waste of your time. Now, if there's something, some group of people, like I work with a group called Cadre here in DC, although it's available on a larger scale now. That they've gotten more virtual and spread out. I work with Cadre because I really enjoy their events and I really enjoy the people. But you can spend way too much time networking when you could be devoting that time to doing all these other things that we're talking about to grow your business.
Yeah, me and my wife have this kind of line that we always say to each other: "It's like no one is forcing you. No one's forcing you." So. A lot of people feel
nobody's keeping score of what bar association meetings you go to.
Right. And so
again, if you enjoy it, or if you aspire to, lead a bar association, or that's important for you because you have other goals and ambitions that supports, then great. Not trying to talk you out of that at all, but don't think you have to fill up your day every day of the week with some kind of networking event in order to grow your business. That's just really an inefficient way of doing it.
And I challenge people, if people post one post a day on their social media, sharing something of value, something that resonates with them personally that they just put out to the world, that's probably a lot more effective than going to networking events. You know, yeah. You have hundreds and thousands of friends on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, wherever. You share that consistently, you will see that'll be a lot more impactful and more significant to your practice than showing up, packing and showing up to a hotel for three, 4 days and, you know, grinding out.
Grinding it out.
Number 11, extra bonus one is, but I think it's crucial for us to talk about this, is not putting out content because you're feeling it's not good enough.
Yeah.
Let me know if that resonates with you.
Oh, dude, this is me in a nutshell. And I just did a whole podcast. I was a guest on Stacey Brown Randall's podcast. And I talked about video content marketing, and how I put off doing video content marketing because I wanted everything to be perfect, right? You know, first off, I wanted to lose 10 pounds before I started recording videos because the camera does what it does. I wanted to get all the right equipment. I wanted to, you know, practice more, and I wanted to have better scripts and yada, yada, yada. And what happened was I wasn't putting out any content, right? As soon as I started just committing to putting out that video content once a week, I saw my practice just take off. And Sam, you were largely an inspiration for that, because I used to watch you walk to work and do your video letter on the walk to work, to the point so often I could recognize, you know, landmarks on your path there to the office. So perfect is the enemy of good enough, or something like that. What's the phrase?
And you brought up that scene of me walking, and I did the same thing yesterday. And actually the video did really well since yesterday that I posted on my Instagram. And I realized after I posted, after a couple hours, I checked it. I'm like, oh, in the first 2 seconds, I made a mistake on a word. I mispronounced it or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, who cares? And it still did really well. A lot of people were like, oh, shoot, I made a mistake, you know, and they would delete it or whatever. No, I realized how powerful this was, because I had to adopt the same mentality myself. Same kind of human emotion of always wanting to do it right. You know, wanting to look good in front of other people. And over time, I kind of worked on this kind of mantra. Done is better than perfect. Done is better than perfect. I remember it was an affirmation for me a couple of years. And then I kind of ingrained it, started practicing it, and started doing it. And then when I started my legal funnel program, I wanted to kind of share these frameworks, these mindset kind of frameworks. And one of those big ones was done is better than perfect. And I kind of mentioned it in the beginning of the program, and I tried mentioning it throughout the program. And when the program would finish, the last module, I would have everybody who was, it was in our program, to come on the camera and share their experience. And by far, the number one most common remark that I got from the program that was life-changing was this framework, this mindset of Sam's done is better than perfect, changed my life. Since then, I've done this. Since then, blah, blah, blah. And it really kind of opened my eyes to see how much this mindset is kind of impactful. And then just a couple of months ago, I thought about it. I'm like, you know, I really want to write my second book. What's something that I've shared that's been impactful? And I realized maybe it is this done is better than perfect.
Yeah,
mentality. That could be it. Yeah. And then me myself kind of prepare for this next book. I've kind of been practicing more of done is better than perfect more than ever the last couple of months. And I'll really, you know, just putting it out there and sharing. So hopefully if you want to support me putting out a book about this, just let us know. You know, reach out to us and let us know. By the way, Neil, I think we need a good way for our audience to be able to interact with us, to ask us questions, give us comments, suggestions, whatever that is. We should definitely set that up for our next kind of episode.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, it's a great idea. So to recap, continuing on the top mistakes that law firm owners should avoid to have the best year yet. Number 6 was being clever, not clear. Number 7, not knowing your numbers. You can only scale with numbers. Number 8, focusing on the what more than on the who. Instead, focus on the who more. Number 9, not embracing technology and having limiting beliefs about tech and automation. Flip that mindset. You are good at tech and automation. You are technical enough. You are fully capable of having your best year yet. Number 10, over networking. You know, no one's forcing you. Build your own clique. Create content. And number 11, done is better than perfect.
Perfect. I think those are coupled with last week's points. You know, Sam, why don't you just quickly run through the last week's points as well, just so we have that in full context. Yeah,
that's a great idea. So the quick little recap of last week's episode. Now, number one was not owning your own marketing assets. So don't give your marketing to marketing companies. You should own it. Always ask for that upfront. You know, owning your own stuff is very crucial. Number two, analysis paralysis, sitting on decisions. If you find out that you're kind of making or decisions, don't make or decisions, make more and decisions. Go try both, move forward. And then from the result at that point, then decide what you should do. Number three, not having a clear schedule that's planned ahead of time, ideally over the weekend. You look at your schedule, you see what's going on throughout the week. Does this align with my goals? Does this align with the mistakes and stuff of time wasters that I had from the previous week? Number four, making or instead of and decisions. Again, I kind of mentioned this in the previous mistake. Again, move forward with your decision and then decide what happens afterwards. And number five, not having a mentor. The most successful people have coaches and mentors. So at least, at the very least, go get yourself in a community like a lawyer club where you can network, get mentored from, share resources, and have breakthroughs in your life.
So I dare say if you take those five points to heart and the five that we, well, the six, because we did an extra one today, if you take those to heart and start kind of asking yourself, how can I apply this? Again, action, action, action. Okay. Do something, you know, done is better than perfect. All of that. Get something done in each one of these areas of interest, and you're going to have your best year yet.
Amazing. And let's just do a little preview of next week's episode. And we are, by the way, Neil, I haven't brought it up to you. We're thinking about switching this into possibly weekly. We'll discuss that off camera. So we'll see whether this will get posted in next week or in 2 weeks. But it will be about the AI updates for Apple and iPhone users. So if you're an iPhone user, there's a lot of huge AI updates that's coming to your phone and your MacBook and your iPad and all that stuff. Just make sure to tune in to get those latest updates about what's going on in the world of Apple.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.